and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Shut up already. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? Nice to see you, Mark Riley. How you doing? You all right?
I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. Can I bring that up, what we were talking about on the break? Is that wrong, Kalo? Is it wrong for me to bring that up here and talk about that kind of stuff on this network, my friend?
Do it, baby.
Well, I had that realization last night where you know you're definitely married to someone younger than you when your post-coital conversation is about Soundgarden and about, you know, we're sitting there, well, you know, maybe my mistake because I got the iPod and I wanted to listen to my ex anthology during the act. And she says, we can't listen to X during sex. And I said, yeah, maybe you're right. She goes, put Soundgarden on. I'm like, oh, that's much better. So then there was the conversation about whether or not the Black Hole Sun video was really good. And I'm like trying to take a nap. And I'm like, wow, how far have I come? Hey, folks, Scotty is dead. Star Trek star James Doohan is dead. He's dead. He's been. Can I make the joke? Everyone's going to be making the joke. He's been beamed up. Yes, he has. I had to.
I heard that about 3 times before I came in.
Already?
Yeah. They're all doing it on TV.
All right. Well, let's scratch it. You know, I'm not going to. He hasn't been beamed up. Maybe there's a problem with the trans. What do you call it?
Transporter. Did you ever watch a show?
Take it easy, will you, buddy? Why don't you just lay out? I just got here. I've barely processed my first cup of coffee. You're already coming at me. Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times. I tried to understand why, you know, people like it. I got nothing against it. I'm not going to judge it. Just didn't engage me. You know, I miss a lot of things. You know, I don't know what things I like and what I don't like. Okay, here's what happens, Chris. I'll tell you. I don't watch anything regularly. I don't do anything that regularly, you know, because for me, it's all got to happen right the first time you see it and then maybe once or twice afterwards. You know what I mean? If you got to keep up with something and get to know characters and why, you know, what kind of stones make things operate and, hey, but how does the transporter work really? You know, if you got to know that kind of stuff or care who Gene Roddenberry is or, you know, consider him a prophet or, you know, actually do the homework and have the shirt with the little insignia on it. Don't, you know, you don't have to accuse me because you had this weird crappy childhood where your father, you know, made you wear Star Trek outfits. I don't need to pay for that, do I this morning? Scotty's dead. What are you going to make? You're going to make light of that?
There's a difference between being a Trekkie and just me watching the movies of my father. He didn't dress me up as a Vulcan or anything. All right? And the man was a good man.
I'm not saying he was
the engineer of the Starship Enterprise.
Okay, you're right.
Had a child at the age of 80.
Okay. Wow.
Very few Americans can say that.
Just him and Tony Randall. And that's it.
No,
it
was Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
And maybe you.
But he had a child at the age of 80. He
81.
Had he had a child
at the age. He fathered a child at the age of 81.
That's very funny.
Fathered a child in 2000.
That's very funny, Chris. It took me a second to realize I'd been hit, but because I was listening to my friend Mark Riley. But yes, maybe me. You're right. That's very funny. That's hilarious.
You can break his record, maybe.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, you have a young wife and everything.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
No, I got the joke. What, do you want to just keep going? You don't think that our listeners are...
I'm just saying you could be 90 and, you know,
yeah.
And have a kid.
God willing, I live to be 90. Why would you want to have a kid unless you wanted to, you know, I guess if she wanted to have one, or why would you want to have a kid at 80 other than to pass on the legacy if there was some money there? You can't give the kid a lot of attention. It's going to be nothing but draining. You're just going to frighten the kid.
Well, you know, both Doohan and Strom Thurmond had bunches of other kids. Oh. And, of course, in Strom Thurmond's case, he had a child by a black woman.
Wow. But you're right. But that was before. That was earlier.
No, he got married at 80, had a child at 81.
Yeah. Well, this is all very important stuff that we're covering. I'm glad we brought it around to the political. You know, with Strom Thurmond, we just didn't wallow in the celebrity, you know, with Chris and his weird childhood where his father made him wear dresses or whatever the hell it was. Anyways, New Yorkers said... I'm sorry, wasn't Klingon outfits, right? He's a good man.
No.
All right, I'm sorry, buddy.
It was only on Sunday.
I knew it. 70% of New Yorkers voters say they are very worried or somewhat worried about a London-style bombing attack. 50% said the city is not adequately prepared to deal with another attack. And also, along the same lines, if we're going to talk polls, Bloomberg is leading against Ferrer. Yes, 52% to 36%, which is Bloomberg's highest rating yet. And now in a weird poll where they were polling people about Hillary Clinton, if she were to do a senatorial race tomorrow against her challenger, Jeanine Pirro. Clinton had her challenger beat by 57% to 31%. And this is a very early poll looking at the 2006 senatorial race, which, you know, I mean, not a lot will happen. I can't imagine that the that Jeanine Pirro will catch up in any way.
Well, Pirro may not even run for the Senate.
All right.
This is just all hypothetical because Pirro says she's running for something, but she hasn't said for what. But Hillary Clinton, there is no Republican on the horizon that can challenge Hillary Clinton, at least not in New York State. Most people are looking at her race next year as the ramp toward a 2008 presidential run.
Uh-huh. So, look, let's talk a little bit about these other numbers because they're kind of interesting and they're kind of revealing in that, a lot of New Yorkers say they're scared. They're scared about the subways. They're scared about what happened, in London, happening here. But they are not they are not too scared not to go to work. 88% they're going to go about their life as usual since the July 8th attacks in London. And 10%, this is an interesting number here, because 10% said they were less likely to ride the bus. 70% said they were less likely to ride the subway. I'm guessing those people don't have to. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, I ride the subway every day, and I'm a little tweaked out. But I am also concerned with the way my brain works, is that when you have the fear, you have the fear. And that means that you're going to be a little, your whole, even if you're just a little polluted with the fear, your whole day is going to sort of, it's going to be there. It's going to be eating at you a little bit.
Well, yeah. And this is a city that almost requires that you end up having to use some form of public transportation. Otherwise, you'll be sitting in traffic on the Gowanus for 6 years.
And I do think about it. I got to be honest with you, Riley. I do think about it. And dig this. This may be even a little more nervous. A transit union official said that the MTA, the Metropolitan Transit Authority, is not doing enough to protect the subway system and the buses from terrorist attack. And the reason they're saying this is that after the London attacks, you think, not unlike here at Air America, you think, hey, how about a meeting? You think maybe you could just get the troops together and say everything's cool, we're on top of this? How about a briefing? How about a something? An email? Tell us that everything's going to be okay and that you're going to do whatever has to be done to make the subway safe. Nothing. So the union guys took it upon themselves, hired an Israeli security specialist.
Yes. This is Roger Toussaint, who's the president of the Transport Workers Union here in New York. A very, very militant guy, by the way. Almost took the transit workers on strike the last time their contract was up. And he has had an adversarial relationship with the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. The authority, of course, says, well, we trained people in the aftermath of September 11th. There have been 44,000 employees since January of 2002, according to the MTA, have gone through a two-hour, quote, eyes and ears class on how to recognize suspicious packages and suspicious people. I think what the union is saying is that isn't good enough. We need a little more than that.
Well, yeah, they're going to take it to the next level. Apparently this Sunday, about 50 workers are going to take a four-hour class on terrorism awareness or an eight-hour class on deterrence. And that's an interesting other set of choices. It's like, if you want to take 4 hours when you're not working and learn about, what you can do in the face of terrorism, which means, you save whoever's around you and yourself. Or if you want to spend another 4 hours, you can actually learn how to stop it. You know what I mean? Who wants to be a hero and who wants to just get out safe? That's going to be the difference in the classes. But I'm glad that the union's taking this upon themselves, because it does make me feel a little safer that the bus drivers, the subway drivers, because I do use both. I've been using the bus a lot more lately.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, look, this is a situation where, you're right, New Yorkers, in the wake of September 11th, ended up going on with their lives. But they also do, I think, expect some level of help out of the transit workers, out of the police that ride the subways and buses in this town. And hopefully now with this training program that's been started by the union, they'll get some.
Well, things have gotten pretty scary around the world in terms of terror threats. U.S. officials say they have indications that there's a terrorist threat planned in Saudi Arabia. In London, there has been a renewed threat by the same bunch of people that made the attacks, the ones that claimed to. I don't want to say that necessarily. The Al-Qaeda group Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigades posted an internet statement dated July 16th saying that Europe would face more attacks like the one in London if they don't pull out their troops from Iraq within a month. Now, in the statement, what's a little scary is that they mention Britain, the Netherlands, Italy, and Denmark by name, and then generally just mention other European countries who have troops in Iraq. Now, this statement hasn't been authenticated, so I don't want to make anybody freak out, but the mention of some of the countries and not others is a little ominous to me in the way that it might imply already functioning cells in the mentioned countries. I don't know, but the quote in it that they closed with which I found very disconcerting, was essentially we're giving here. Let me just make sure I say it right. We're giving you a deadline so that you stop running behind the United States and the Zionists without paying any attention to the blood that has been shed and continues to be shed in the land of Islam, in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Palestine. That's the end of the quote from the European franchise of Al-Qaeda and the Abu Hafs al-Masri brigades, who have claimed responsibility for the London bombing and have now threatened to do more in several different countries if they don't pull their troops out in a month. And it's very scary stuff, because two-thirds of the public in England believe that their linkage to the U.S. in the Iraq conflict is what caused the terrorist attacks a couple weeks ago.
Well, it certainly makes Tony Blair's day. He's been trying to convince the British public that the attack in London has nothing to do with the British presence in Iraq, and here come these websites saying, oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, you know, in the Matt Cooper piece, in terms of the leakage, in terms of the Rove leak that compromised national security, the identity of Valerie Plame has been substantiated, validated, justified. We'll tell you about that in a minute. We're also going to tell you about Scooter Libby, who is Dick Cheney's Dick Cheney, and we're going to tell you about the Chanel leakage involved in this. It's 17 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Air America Radio. Did I say that already?
Morning Sedition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 22 past the hour. It's Mark Maron. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That's Mark Riley.
Yes.
We got the iNews coming up in a few minutes this Friday. That's tomorrow. We'll be at Park Slope, Brooklyn, performing the show from the T Lounge on Union Street between 6 and 7 from 6 to 9 a.m. Freddy Johnson is going to be there almost the entire morning playing some songs. That's going to be great. Right now, though, let's get into this. We already talked about yesterday. We talked about the Supreme Court nominee Roberts. That'll come back. We'll deal with that later. But right now, let's talk about Chanel leakage. That's what I want to talk about. Dick Cheney's chief of staff, Lewis, Scooter is his nickname, Libby, was the second possible source in the leaking of the identity of Valerie Plame in this scandal. It's a whole new level of seditious conspiracy on behalf of the neocon death cult. The Supreme Court nomination subterfuge is not going to work. We're past it. That can wait. This was, as Riley and I have been saying, there's a couple of things going on, but by and large, it was a covert strategy, on behalf of the neocon cabal of Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, Armitage, Feith, to initiate the war in Iraq at the cost of anything. All right, they used George Bush, who, volunteered. He's no victim in this, but he's certainly not in control of the country. He is the faux Christian, AWOL, ex-blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, and it's never been more apparent now. I have never seen a president less in charge of his country. These guys don't care. Remember, Cheney is a guy that said Reagan showed us that deficits don't matter. This guy doesn't care. He's made a fortune for himself and his friends. All right, he's got the war he wants that will generate that fortune for as long as it stays going on, whether he's in office or not, and he's bankrupted the government. That's what they wanted, and they don't care what happens now. They'll go to jail. These guys don't care. So what? They get nailed on perjury. They go to jail for a few years. They come out. They work in the private sector. They're taken care of. It's like the mafia, right?
It is like the mafia in many ways. And Scooter Libby, we ought to point out, was the point man across the board in the effort to get all of Bush's cabinet on board with the invasion of Iraq. Remember that it was Colin Powell, as Secretary of State, back in those days before the run-up to the war, who was asking some very serious questions about the intelligence that the Bush administration was trying to push both on him and other departments within the Bush cabinet, about the whole yellow cake thing, about Saddam's progress in procuring other nuclear materials, about whether or not Saddam had any hostile intentions towards his neighbors. all of this stuff was promoted by Scooter Libby on behalf of Dick Cheney, who, in a move that has been unprecedented as far as I can tell, was going out to Langley, out to the CIA headquarters on a quasi-regular basis to make sure that the CIA was on board with
it. And then to leave them holding on to the bag, and that's what they're doing to the president. That's how the CIA plays into this. The CIA is pissed off at this administration. The CIA are the ones that initiated this grand jury. The CIA are mad. You know, they've been made fools of. Their budget has been taken away by this administration. Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby, like you said, Riley, were bullying Colin Powell. I mean, you know, Cheney, to paraphrase, said, look, you know, your approval rating's at 70%. You could stand to lose a few points.
Yeah, And see, what they are not saying about that whole period is that they tried to make Colin Powell look like some kind of a wimp because he was not on board with the unilateral invasion of Iraq. He didn't think there was enough evidence, and what Libby and Cheney and the rest of these people tried to do, these neocons, was to say, well, hey, you know, he's you know, he may be an ex-military guy, which is where he got the gravitas to oppose this, but he said on the other hand, they were saying on the other hand, well, you know, he didn't really want to invade the, Iraq the first time. He's not really a hawk like we are. He's not one of us.
Not a team player. He's not willing to lie and kill thousands of people and put the national security of this country in a compromised position in order to get what he wants for a small group of people. You have to understand that. Now, the CIA is speaking, too. They're speaking out as well. But also this memo, this State Department memo that was on the plane with George W. Bush and Colin Powell 2 days after the Joe Wilson piece ran in the New York Times saying that there was no yellow cake from Niger, actually proves and says in the third paragraph that Valerie Plame, in the paragraph there, Valerie Wilson is a covert operative. This is classified information. So whoever got their eyes on that memo, and this was 3 days before the Novak piece came out.
Yep.
Whoever got their eyes on that memo knew. Okay, so this is where this might be a smoking gun. Hopefully, you know, we're staying on this, but this would implicate. This could implicate Rove. It certainly could implicate the president. It certainly could implicate Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney, that they all knew. And I think they all knew. They, of course they knew.
Well, they see what we're seeing now, Mark, is a move away from this story in favor of the Supreme Court nominee. But we're not going to go for that. We're not going to let our listeners go for that.
We got the iNews coming up next. I also wanted to maybe get into this CIA thing. And also, is there a reason to eat lots of chocolate? Could there be a reason? Could Sleeper have been right, the Woody Allen movie? Could it have? It's 27 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Hey, can I ask you a question, fellas? Can I, Chris? Mark, can I ask you a question, fellas?
Sure!
Every woman I've ever had a long-term relationship with, well, this wife and my last wife have had secret chocolate stashes. Do yours?
No. No.
No?
No.
I don't know why. My first wife, you know, I'd go in the freezer and be, what the hell is this under the ice? And there'd be a candy bar there, right? My wife, Mishna, always hiding the chocolate around. I just find candy bars here and there. And I figured it out. You know, women generally live longer than men. Do you know why?
Why?
It's the damn chocolate, my friend. There's a study out that proves that chocolate, dark chocolate, might be good for you. Now, I'm not saying it's a license to get fat, and we'll talk about it in just a second. I'm not saying, like, theoretically, you know, if you weigh 300 pounds and you're like, yay, chocolate, it's probably not good for you, all right? And it's not milk chocolate, it's bitter chocolate, dark chocolate. But, you know, the only reason I'm saying is a public service announcement. That there's not free license for big old, huge people who have a weight problem to eat chocolate. And I'm not making fun of you, you know? I understand. I envy you in a way.
But why does your wife hide chocolate from you?
It's not a matter of hiding chocolate. Why? What do you mean? Have you seen me eat? Do you know me?
That's true.
Do you know
she's
me?
She's probably like, oh, I can't
if I leave this out, he's going to eat it.
Now, did your ex-wife do that too?
Well, kind of, but I think she was more, she's a little more precious about it. She actually, you know, just wanted to have her own stash. She just, it was like her little secret while I was out, you know, doing blow and drinking. You know, she'd be like, I hope he doesn't get my chocolate. It's like the last thing I was worried about. But anyways, sometimes it's hard to, and when you read the papers, you don't know what the hell they're saying, I think is what I'm trying to say. But thank God we got this Wi-Fi, what is it, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Is that it?
That's
is that it. What it is? Let's read it, some headlines here. We're going to talk about the CIA in a minute, man. They're onto it.
Okay,
here we go. From the Financial Times, China hits at U.S. claim they are a China hits. Wouldn't that be hints? What is that? China hits at U.S. claim they are military threat. It's hits.
Yeah.
All right. Translation. Let's see. China hits at U.S. claim they're military threat. Translation. Furious Chinese vow to crush U.S. for calling them a military threat. From Fox News. Canada Senate okays gay nups. Canada Senate okays gay nups. Translation, man on Manitoba.
Oh, my God.
Ha ha! All right. From Reuters. You know how long I thought that was Reuters? Yeah. From Reuters. Parents group urges recall video game Grand Theft Auto. Parents group urges recall of video game Grand Theft Auto. Translation, parents shift blame for bad parenting to video games. All right, in relation to the smoking gun memo, I hate that word, smoking gun. All right, the memo that says that Valerie Plame's identity was classified, and that memo was on a plane with George W. Bush, Colin Powell, going to Africa just 2 days after the Joe Wilson editorial saying the Niger yellow cake uranium story was bunk, which means that they knew. They knew. They knew she was undercover, so that doesn't hold. So that means that at least Rove is going up for perjury. Hopefully.
Hopefully. Now, the other question here is, remember that on that plane as well, with the president, with Colin Powell, was Dan Bartlett, who is still in the White House, and Ari Fleischer, who at the time was Bush's press secretary.
Dan Bartlett's a snot.
Well, my question is, have either or both of them testified in front of Patrick Fitzgerald's grand jury?
Well, that's the stuff we're not hearing. You know why? Because he just nominated a new Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
You know, where there's been a news stall on this thing. I have no idea what the federal prosecutor's up to today or yesterday. I have no idea what Fitzgerald's doing. We need to know. But in light of that, you know, we're exploring the channel leakage. Channel leakage today. But the CIA, this is what's interesting, because Cheney did go over, as you said before, Riley, he was over there almost every other day leading up to the Iraq war, trying to bully them into giving him intelligence that fit the neocon agenda, even if it was half-baked. And then after everything was said and done, after it was all found out to be lies, George Tenet was left holding the bag. You know, he got his walking papers. The entire CIA was shook up. Most of the intelligence facilities were moved over to the Pentagon under Rumsfeld's new big $80 billion budget or whatever the hell he got, you know, and now, you know, they're pissed because 11 former intelligence officers say the leak of Valerie Plame's identity may have damaged national security and the government's ability to gather intelligence, which we said a couple of days ago, and I'm always happy when we get a jump on the actual news, is that how could it not? This is Karl Rove. This is Scooter Libby. This is Dick Cheney. This is the President Bush facilitating all this, the neocon death cult making a decision that even in a world full of terrorism, as they portrayed it, that it was more important for them to take personal revenge against anybody that would question their justification for war and possibly put the international intelligence about terrorism at risk for God knows how long. Who the hell's going to sign up to be a covert agent now?
Well, you know, these agents, these 11 former CIA people, said in this letter, and by the way, this was a statement that was delivered to congressional leaders. They said something that's very, very interesting here. They said that the RNC, the Republican National Committee, which we knew, of course, headed by Ken Millman, has been circulating these suggestions on how to deal with all this by saying that Plame was not working undercover and therefore, quote, legally, unquote, deserved no protection. We now know that the State Department's own documents, the intelligence arm of the State Department's own documents, said that Plame was working undercover, and the Bush White House knew it. So now how are they going to sit here and try and parse this to say, well, she didn't deserve any protection because she was working a desk job?
Well, that was their big thing, and that was another BS talking point out of Melman's arse. All right. The thing is that that desk job, you know, people, what do you, you know, are Americans that stupid? Do they have this romanticized idea that a covert agent walks around in a trench coat with a hat tipped over their face? I mean, there are literally thousands of covert CIA operatives working at desks in the Washington area alone. And their big thing is, if she's working at a desk, she couldn't have been undercover. Maybe she was. People do identity fraud, you know, on the internet, that people never leave their homes and run empires. Maybe she was running a fake business. It could have been any number of things. The amount of stuff you can do from a desk now is mind-blowing. And for them to sort of, like, play on America's, like, stupidity by saying, she's worked at a desk, well, that doesn't make any difference anymore. The matter is, it was in a classified State Department document that they all knew about. Valerie Wilson, a.k.a. Valerie Plame, was under secret covert cover.
Not only that, these are 11 former intelligence officials. Intelligence officers, we've only seen in this administration, Mark, the Larry Johnsons, the Bob Bears, the people, the Melissa Mollies, the people who work in intelligence. Most of the time, for most of my career in this business, I had no clue who a CIA person was other than the director of Central Intelligence. We know all these people because they are speaking out about what they see as an assault on their professionalism by this administration.
So guess who? Dummy. George W. Bush, the faux Christian, AWOL, ex-blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, who it seems even less in charge than ever, saying that he can't say what's going on in his own White House until the investigator tells him. All right, he is caught in the crossfire between the neocons and the CIA, and this is interesting stuff. I'm not dismissing him from responsibility. He knew exactly what goes on, and he deserves it. But he looks stupid. And he's not stupid. He's a very crafty, shrewd politician. But right now, it is clear that that president does not run this country.
Let me tell you how crafty the Bush White House is. Now, today, a couple days after, a day after Roberts is nominated Supreme Court Justice, they push all of the Roe stuff off the front pages of most of the newspapers. And what do they have in the New York Times? A story about how George Bush interviewed people for the Supreme Court justice spot that he eventually nominated John Roberts for. And they talk about his conversations with Judge Wilkinson.
Wow.
and his weight and how
Wow.
he has to start cross-training because his knees are going to go. So what they do is plant this whole thing about what a folksy guy George W. Bush is and how he vetted these people.
Yeah.
And at the same time, don't make the connection that he was doing this last week when he should have been finding out who it was in his administration that leaked Valerie Plame's name. Instead, he's discussing health tips with a potential Supreme Court judge?
Yeah, right. And a statement from the Democratic National Chairman Howard Dean on the nomination of John Roberts to the Supreme Court included this. This came out from the DNC. Washington, faced with a growing scandal surrounding the involvement of Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove and Vice President Cheney's Chief of Staff Louis Libby in the leaking the identity of a covert CIA operative, President Bush announced his nomination of John Roberts to the Supreme Court late this evening. Democratic National Chairman Howard Dean issued the following statement on the nomination. Then he goes on to do a statement, but they're onto it too. Dean's always we think alike, this show and he most
yeah,
of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as promised, a study published by the American Heart Association says that flavonoids, compounds found in dark chocolate, can help blood vessels work more smoothly, perhaps reducing the risk of heart disease. But clearly, listen, not if you weigh 300 pounds. Do you understand? And dark chocolate is not milk chocolate. Milk chocolate is, a lot of people like it better, but I don't. Personally, dark chocolate.
I don't
chocolate.
Either. That's really weird. By the way, does Malay sauce count?
I think it might.
I think it might because I think they make it from dark chocolate.
Yeah, I think that's like the pure chocolate. But
yeah.
You know, the problem with Malay sauce is 90% pig fat.
Is
lard.
That what it is?
Yes,
oh,
that's
man.
Why I got so nauseous in Mexico. It's just like all the goop in it. It's just lard. Mexicans still use pig fat.
Oh, man.
Speaking of pig fat, right? Go out to dinner with my wife. My wife, who is sympathetic to my vegetarianism.
And who is currently sleeping.
To my newfound vegetarianism. She's like, let's go to that Colombian place. I'm like, all right. So, what do I get to eat at the Colombian place? They have no fish. They had some, but they didn't recommend it. You don't want to go against the waitress going, I don't get the fish. So my wife gets a half a roast chicken and chicharrones. You know what chicharrones is? They make it. My stepmother makes it as well. But the Mexicans do it a little different. It's this big slab of pig fat. It's a big piece of pig skin with little niblets of meat on it that they deep fry.
Oh,
and it's
so
about
good.
A foot long. All right?
Oh, you're talking about chicharrón.
Chicharrón.
Yeah.
Chicharrón,
but they make it for, yeah, it's kind of like for, they do it for pork and
right.
chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. They call that, the Colombians call it chicharrón, and I think that my stepmom calls it chicharrones.
Yeah.
Which is a different little piece of the pig, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there with my rice and beans and salad and avocados looking at this foot long strip of fried pig skin.
Extruded pork.
And she's just looking at me, and I'm like, what, did you do this to me on purpose? Is this on purpose?
And it smells so good.
It's, and I'm like, what does it taste like? She's like, bacon.
Oh,
like,
Lord.
I don't know why you're doing this to me. Why are you doing this to me? She goes, you want me to get it to go? We can go get you a piece of fish somewhere? I'm like, shut up. Just shut up.
And you love bacon.
Yeah. Wait till tonight. She's going to take you up to Sylvia's in Harlem. Y'all can have some ribs.
She's breaking me down. I know what she's doing. She's just breaking me down. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio. We got the Cliff Notes coming up next. And gay marriage, good news for same-sex couples in Canada.
Yeah.
Stay here.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, 50, I said. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi, yes.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's Thursday. It feels like Friday because we're going to be out of the studio tomorrow. Like, so today, like, I know in my head I get to sleep in a little bit.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow we go live from the Tea Lounge in Brooklyn at Union Street between 6th and 7th. If you want to come down, Freddie Johnson's going to be there playing. You remember him? He's a singer-songwriter guy. He's good. He's like, he was really big for a while. I want to thank Kay. I got an email from this woman, Kay, who is a law student, that basically said, Mark, this morning you were looking for words to describe the current covert business plan of this administration. I suggested some of the following words, as defined in Black's Law Dictionary, should be liberally applied. And she sent me this great list: collusion, subterfuge, concussionary, conjuration, seditious, conspiracy, connivance, conquest. And then she writes, whew, all right, it seems that there's no end to applicable terms for criminal behavior, since these terms come to mind simply coming through the seas. So I do appreciate it, because I actually used one. Now, if only I knew what they meant, Kay. No, the definition's here. I kid. For those of you who are just tuning in, good morning. But also, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. An Ohio County election official has been disciplined for taking money from the Diebold Voting Machine Company. Diebold gave the elections director a $10,000 check, which he forwarded to the local Republican Party, thus reusing a bribe to bribe some other bribers. The elections director couldn't accept inappropriate money, but he could give it to the Republicans to help guarantee he could accept inappropriate money in the future. A group of parents wants to ban the word fail from British classrooms. In a related story, American teachers in inner city schools want to replace the word bitch with teacher. The word fail must be banned from use in British classrooms. Other words which may be used to describe failed students once they leave school, like loser, homeless person, bum, drug addict, and inmate, will remain unchanged. The federal government is cracking down on pornography spam. The porn companies argued, quote, they are not emailing men sexually explicit material. They were just teasing them and leading them to the sexually explicit material, providing they were willing to spend enough money. It was really no different than a date. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. I hope you appreciated them out there, driving in your cars or on your trains, listening to your iPod.
Now, how long is it going to be before we get about 12 calls from teachers? What did you just say?
Bring it. Uh-oh. Bring it.
Bring it.
If you're a teacher, you know, God love you for doing the hard work for no money. You know what I mean? God, I wish that they would just pay teachers. You know, that's one of the reasons, you know? That's one of the reasons why schools are bad, is because teachers make like a nickel a day, for God's sake. It's like sweatshop wages in this country.
Well, yeah, and ridiculous. They should get paid the way athletes get paid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sign up to a five-year deal, give them millions of dollars, we'll have really smart kids.
Would that be based on the performance of their kids? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Million-dollar teachers?
Million-dollar teachers,
why
yeah.
Why not?
If 100% of your kids can pass a statewide test, why not pay them $1 million?
I think you're right. So, hey, if you're a Canadian and you're in a same-sex couple, today's your day. Get ready. Go out and buy the two dresses or the two tuxes. What? I don't know.
What's next? Dwarves?
Oh, boy. Yes, dwarves. I think it's legal for dwarves to get married anywhere.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so now along with Spain, the Netherlands, and Belgium, same-sex couples can get married here in North America.
Yeah.
This is the first country, I believe, in North America to legalize same-sex marriage, obviously, because that's the only four that have it. None of them are here, right?
Yeah.
The guy who's very confident but not sure. And that's right, isn't it? Huh? Is it? All right. So congratulations, Canadian same-sex people wanting to get married.
Yeah.
How's that? Yeah. Why not? All right. So now let's get into another story. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, who we no longer talk about on this show.
Ah, yes.
Though Howie Pashman comes to our remotes. I like Howie. Howie's the quiet brother.
Yeah.
Dan Pashman is going to Nantucket. Is that true? No, Martha's Vineyard.
Martha's Vineyard.
And it just so happens that did you see that shark, Riley? Did you see the shark that they caught? This is unbelievable.
That thing is half the size of Massachusetts.
An 1,100-pound tiger shark just off the coast of Massachusetts. Dan, what does that mean to you? Why don't you come in here and talk to me? Come in here and tell me if you're going to go. Did you look at this is just a tail and teeth, bro. Look at this. Look, the entire body is just there to facilitate that head to eat Dan Pashman legs.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it means to me, Mark.
What?
Dinner.
You're going to be dinner?
No.
The
shark in the picture doesn't look like he's ready to eat anyone.
Dude, I feel bad for the shark. Is that weird? Look at that thing. He's all strung up. It's huge. It's like Jaws. How could you not make that analogy? Look at the head.
It is pretty
amazing.
Are
you going to go swimming?
Not only was Jaws was filmed on Martha's Vineyard.
Is this trivia time? Are you going to go swimming?
Yes.
No trunks for Pashman. I don't think you've got any trunks you're going to bring out there.
Oh, I got my trunks. That's like 10 miles offshore. I like to lie right where the waves break so the waves pick you up and slam you into the sand over and over
again. That's where they come.
No.
Three feet of water. 3 feet of water is where most sharks' attacks occur, I heard.
That's not true.
It is so true. They just swim really close looking for chow.
You get a better chance of dying by falling off a ladder than you do of getting eaten by a shark.
Shark specialty? Jewish legs? Jewish legs.
Really?
They prefer Jewish
it's
legs.
It's a delicacy in the shark community.
Yes, yes. It's like whitefish to us.
There's a little mayo and celery in there.
Oh, look, Pashman salad.
Jewish salad. Are you really going to go in the water? I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I'm crazy because I can't even. If it's nighttime and there's a pool and there's not a light in the pool, I get the creeps there because that shark could crawl, you know, get in. I just don't like deep water that I can't see the bottom.
That's a rational fear.
Dude, don't tell me about rational. Look at that picture. Did you see that?
It's pretty breathtaking.
Go on the internet, whoever you are in your car. Just go look at this fish that they caught off the coast in Nantucket.
Yeah, if you just Google shark vineyard, the picture will come up.
It's nuts. Wow. How did they even catch it? What, did they shoot it? What kind of hook did
they have a big shark catching competition on the vineyard every year.
No, they used a Jew as bait. Is that wrong?
I think yeah.
We got to go. Coming up, we've got, come on, man. What do we got? If you're living together with somebody, you might be breaking the law. Dig that. All right.
Yeah.
How's that for you? All right. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio. Jews.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo!
It is Thursday. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. We will be performing live tomorrow in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Where are you going, Kalo? You leaving?
I'm going to the bathroom.
You going to the bathroom? You're just going to leave the new guy there? All right. You okay? You feeling all right over there? Okay. Just as long as we're okay and the sound doesn't go off. Here we go. We'll be going to T Lounge is where we'll be tomorrow, Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. That's tomorrow, 6 to 9. We've got Freddie Johnson's going to be there. Mark and I will be there. The Cardinal will be there. Pendejo will be there, the Revolutionary. We did get one email saying that Pendejo is not a nice thing to say, but we didn't say it. He made it up.
Yeah.
So there you go. And then, what else we got going on? Morning's Edition will be heard as part of HBO's 6 Feet Under this Sunday night. Check it out. I got to check that out. Did you know that? I guess
I haven't seen it.
Perhaps that character is going to be listening to the radio and our show is going to be on. I will be at Gotham Comedy Club Friday and Saturday if you want to come down. I'm not pressuring you, all right? I'm just telling you because I don't want to get those emails where it's like, why didn't you tell anybody that? I put it on my website. Now I'm putting it on ours. It's on the road dates, yeah, the show schedules. Well, that's where I'll be. Now, let's talk about this a little bit, Riley, if we can. By the way, Rob Zombie will be here in a little while.
He will?
Yeah, I went and saw that saw a screener of the movie in preparation to talk to Rob Zombie. And you know what? It was strangely, disgustingly enchanting, his new movie, Hell's Rejects, or The Devil's Rejects. I didn't see the other one. I didn't go in for that stuff.
Oh, The Land of a Thousand Corpses or something?
Right.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, you know, I didn't love those movies that he's playing on. You know, the
Last House on the Left, Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
the Tobe Hooper movie. But I understood it, and you know, he did capture a certain rawness that I found kind of engaging. So dig this. I thought this was a pretty interesting story, Riley. Union officials, transit union officials here in Manhattan, have said that the Metropolitan Transit Authority is not doing enough to protect us on our subways and buses here in New York in light of the London bombing. Apparently, the Metropolitan Transit Authority has not reached out to the transit union at all in the sense of, like, we should have a discussion, we should have a briefing, we should talk about what's going on in terms of what we're doing here to protect ourselves from that. And in a related poll, 72% of New York voters here are very worried, or at least somewhat worried, about a London-style bombing attack. 50% said the city is not adequately prepared to deal with another attack. 88% said they've gone on about their life as usual since the July 8th attacks in London. And, of course, they have. What else are you going to do? And this is the number I like. 10% said they were less likely to ride a bus. 70% said they were less likely to ride a subway. I'm betting those people don't have to ride the bus or the subway. I ride both. I've been starting to take the buses lately more. It's very quick, especially crosstown.
Crosstown is the best way to get, the bus. I mean, other than that, the only other way is to walk, because there was only one crosstown subway line in the entire Manhattan corridor.
The L, right, yeah. So you'd have to cross over.
Actually, two, the shuttle and the shuttle number 7 in the L.
Yeah. Yes, the shuttle, the L, yeah. But I just jump on the bus, because you can use your MetroCard, and it's kind of fun. It's exciting. My mother-in-law drives a bus. I've not been on her bus, though. When I go to Seattle, I'm going on my mother-in-law's bus before she retires.
I wanted to be now they call them train operators. Back in the day, they used to call them motormen. That was my desire in life at one time.
My father-in-law, he's kind of my father-in-law. My mother-in-law's, live-in companion for the last many years, drives a trolley. A trolley.
Now that must be fun.
I'm going. You know what? I got to go on both of their modes of. I'm going to go on both of their jobs the next time I go to Seattle. I can't believe I've not gone on his trolley. But anyways, moving on here in the sense that the transit union officials have themselves taken it into their own hands. The transit union has taken it into their own hands. Hired an Israeli security expert. They are going to this Sunday. About 50 workers will either take a 4-hour class on terrorism awareness or an 8-hour class on deterrence. That's depending on whether they want to be a hero or just save their butt. All right, so I think that's a very proactive thing, and I'm thankful for it, because this means that some of these people will be your bus drivers, your subway drivers, the people that are working down there. At least some of them will have taken it upon themselves to learn about how to react to this.
Well, yeah, and if for those of you who don't know the New York transit system, there are plenty of opportunities for terrorists to leave something on a train, and that means it's not just going to be up to the conductors or to the train operators. It's also going to be up to the cleaning and maintenance people who go through the trains when they're parked at different stations waiting to go back out. There's a lot involved here, and the Transport Workers Union, who represents all of these folks, are saying, you know what, we need to make sure that our people are properly prepared, and that's a good thing.
I think it is a good thing, because I do have the fear myself most of the time. Shifting gears a little bit, who hasn't lived with somebody for years? I lived with my first wife for like, you know, 5 or 8 years before we got married. I lived with a woman for a couple years before that. A study out of the Rutgers-based National Marriage Project states that they are glad the divorce rate is going down, but there is an incredible rise in cohabitation. This does concern them a little bit because apparently children of cohabitating couples may not fare as well in the sense that there is a high breakup rate.
Yeah.
In cohabitating. But that's not really the issue. The interesting thing is that be careful if you're cohabitating because it's illegal. It's illegal to live together in 7 states, and it's even enforced in some of these states. If you're living together in Florida, Michigan, Mississippi, North Carolina, North Dakota, Virginia, West Virginia, you're breaking the law against, quote, lewd and lascivious, unquote, cohabitation. The ACLU filed a suit on behalf of a woman who lost her job with the Pender State Sheriff's Department in North Carolina because she lived with her boyfriend. Can you believe that?
Now, does that mean that simply the act of living together means that you're lewd and lascivious? Is that what they're implying here?
Yeah, obviously. And wow. These are old laws. Some of them date back to the 1800s. The ACLU says they're unconstitutional and that they criminalize people's choice of who they live with, obviously. But these laws can be exploited. Let's say, you know, they can be exploited by a landlord who doesn't want to.
Well, yeah, and see, they are routinely exploited, even in places that don't have the laws. If a landlord has to choose between a couple that's married and a couple that's cohabiting, guess who they choose?
That's right.
They choose the married couple.
Because they make judgments.
Yeah.
Even though the married couple could be crazy.
Yeah.
Serial killers. Who the hell knows? Hey,
but speaking from experience, are we?
No, but you know, people judge. You know,
I think
most of the time, you know, 90% of the time, your judgments of somebody are projections, and they're usually not true. I find that from personal experience. My father thinks he can read people, and he's always wrong, but he still insists that he understands that. You know,
do we have any cohabitators in the house?
Yeah, I think we do. Kalo.
Oh,
but it's not a law here, though. You're cool. But if you were in South Dakota, you'd have to be a little nervous. Guys would have to pretend like you were married because it's against the law. There's all these weird blue laws. Look at this. We haven't confirmed a lot of these, all right, and we didn't make them up. We don't know if they're still on the books. But here's some strange laws that we found in our research, all right? In Michigan, a state law stipulates a person can't swear in front of a woman or children.
Oh,
how do you like that?
Wow.
I'd be locked away for sure.
Yeah, I cuss at kids all the time. If I have an opportunity to, you know, just tell a kid. Right, anyway. In New York, a fine of up to $25 can be levied for flirting, my friends. Dig this. This is an old law specifically prohibits men from turning around on any city street and looking at a woman in that way.
Dude,
I'm in jail.
In that way.
I'm such a big flirt.
So was half the construction workers in New York.
But is that flirting when you actually look at a woman and she doesn't know she's looking at you? You're looking at her? That's not flirting. That's just being alive.
Reckless eyeballing?
They always know. Come on.
Yeah, they do.
Even when you're behind them?
They can tell.
Oh, man.
They have a sixth sense, man.
I don't even know what that is. I know it's rude, but I do look.
It's a force of habit.
Huh?
It's a force of habit.
It's difficult, you know, if you're walking with your wife or your girlfriend, you got to be careful. You know what I mean? But my wife is so stunning. I like to look at men looking at my wife. For some reason, that gets me off a
pervo.
Little bit.
Yeah, me too, actually.
That's some straight-up pervo stuff.
No, it's not. It's pride. What, are you kidding me? It's pride.
Of what? Pride of ownership? What, are you Bush?
Yeah, but no. Well, not pride of ownership. Just like, yeah, it's mine. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, see? Pride of ownership.
Oh, well, you never felt that? You're not proud? You're not proud that you're married to a beautiful woman?
Oh, yeah, but I'm proud I'm married to, I mean, I'm proud I got a nice car, but I don't put them in the same category.
I'm not putting them in the same category. I'm just like looking at guys' faces going, yeah, you're wondering how I got that? Because I'm a genius, and I'm amazing in bed, and I'm charming, and she's scared of me.
I'm a stud, can't you tell?
What the hell's wrong with that? It's just human. Here's a good one. If you ever find yourself driving at night through rural parts of Pennsylvania State, law requires that you stop every mile to send up a rocket signal.
Wow.
What the hell does that even mean?
Was it like an M80 or something?
Yeah, it's like, honey, don't wake the kids up. I got to pull over and do the thing.
Wow.
Just so they know where we are.
I got one that's really good.
Wait, I'm sorry. How many rockets are you supposed to have in your car?
You better be driving an armored
truck.
Enough
to blow the car up.
That's hilarious.
Now, this is one that I find amazing.
Yeah.
In the state of Florida, mind you, this is the same state that has Miami and South Beach and all of that.
Yeah.
The missionary position is the only legal sex position.
In Florida, that law is definitely being broken.
Violated as we speak.
My girlfriend would love that law.
Chris,
She'd move to Florida in a heartbeat.
It looks like people are calling to share laws with us. So let's open the phones. 866-303-2270. If you know of any laws or you've been busted breaking any of these weird laws. Look at, in Wyoming, women are required to stand 5 feet away from the bar while drinking. What is that? So like,
back up.
What is that? Just like, no, she's wobbling. Turn her off. Shut. You know what? Yeah. 866-303-2270. If you want to share some experiences about these laws, you know of any laws that we don't know of? But we've got a few here, but we probably got more. So let's do that when we come back. We'll see if we get any other interesting calls. We've got radio theater is coming up shortly. That's all coming up next. 17 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866. 303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, 21 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270 about weird laws. Weird laws. What do you got for me, Chris?
Actually, Mark, we have future Mark on line one.
Well, that's cool. Wait, you mean future Mark, right?
No, it's future Mark, the 2-inch tall Mark from 100 years in the future.
Oh, weird. All right, we'll put him through. Hey, buddy, what's up? So, future Mark, why are you calling? And when are you calling from?
It's 2150, dude. Why am I calling? Well, future Mark got in some trouble, and he asked me to call you instead.
Oh, man, what happened?
I kind of had to rat him out.
Oh, man, really?
Uh-huh.
You had to rat him out?
Yeah, well, it's no big deal, especially these days. Besides, I had a quota to meet. Future Mark was there, so I told the cops he did something.
No.
The important thing is, I met my quota.
Whoa. You have to meet a quota for ratting people out?
Exactly. You know how your President Bush talked about ownership society?
Yeah.
Well, when everyone just stopped pretending and Karl Rove became president forever, he instituted what he called the Informer Society.
Rove? President forever?
Yeah.
Informer Society?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, no. What's that?
It's the informant patrol, man. This is the morning rush. A lot of people like to meet their snitching quota before work. That way they don't have to think about it for the rest of the day.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So everybody's a stoolie because we weren't able to bring Rove down in 2005?
Yeah, basically. And that's not all. Rove's president of the world, man. He cloned himself, entered every election across the globe, rigged the votes, and won them all.
Oh, my God. That's so believable.
Ah, crap. That's me. One of the neighbors must have ratted me out. I gotta go find out what I did, Mark. I'll talk to you later.
Wow. That sounds rough, man. Rove is president and everyone's informing on each other. Jeez.
Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah, future Mark is online, too.
Really? Regular future Mark? All right, put him on. Busy day today. Hey, buddy, what's
hey,
up?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Future Mark, I thought you were being detained because future Mark ratted you out to meet his Rove quota.
What? When did this happen?
I was just on the phone with him. It was the year 2150.
Oh, man. I'm calling from 2050. That little weasel. We made a bargain not to rat on each other. Are you telling me he dropped a dime on me?
Evidently, dude. He didn't seem too torn up about it either.
That tiny bastard.
So, did you have to go to jail in the future? I mean, will you?
No, it's more of a nuisance. They interrogate you for about 5 minutes. You cop to what you were accused of. They put a little blurb in Time magazine, and you're free to go.
All right, wait a minute, Future Mark. Future Mark told me that Karl Rove became president forever. Tell me that's not true, man.
Well, nothing's forever, Mark. He's only been president for about 145 years, but so far it's true.
Hey, Mark. Sorry to bother you. Future Mark is back on line one.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
What's up?
Hey, buddy, why'd you rat me out?
Oh, come on, man. Don't be pissed.
Hey, Mark, we gotta go. I got some miniaturized ass to kick here.
Oh, big tough guy, huh? Gonna kick my ass.
Hey.
You and what army?
Hey, why don't you guys call me back when you figure this out?
Freak.
You're the freak, Jumbo.
Insects. Hey, Mark, here's your advice. Never make a deal with a little rat.
Oh, that's a good one. Real clever.
Okay, that's enough. Bye, guys.
This has been a big day, man.
Yeah, really.
a lot of so we're taking calls, you know, outside of Future Mark. We were talking about cohabitation and how living together is illegal in some states. And we asked people to give a call with laws from where they are, laws that they know about. We've got Linda calling from Kentucky, listening to WCKY. How are you, Linda?
Hey, Linda.
I'm just fine. Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Good morning. We're very good. What do you got? What do you know?
Well, in Kierkin, Kentucky, there is a law in the books that if a woman is walking down a public street in a bathing suit, she must carry a club.
Come on.
A club?
A club. That is how the word is written, club. And it shows a picture of a woman in a 1920s bathing suit carrying this big baseball bat.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wow. So what do you carry generally when you're walking down the street with a bathing suit on? You carry
at age 48, I don't walk down the street in bathing suit.
All right. But when you were younger, did you carry a golf club or a stick or anything?
Oh, when we were real young, we used to carry BB guns.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right, just as long as you were protecting yourself. That's what I like to hear. That law-abiding citizen. Thanks for your call, Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
A club. Can you believe that?
A baseball. Well, you know, Kentucky, the home of the Louisville Slugger. Why not?
There you go. Randy, listening in Sacramento. What do you got? Quickly, Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Hey, Mark and Mark, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
My favorite law is that it's perfectly legal for the blind to hunt in Texas and Minnesota.
Come on!
Oh, don't start.
Oh, thanks for your call, Randy. It's legal for the blind to hunt. What is that? I think I hear something.
Oh!
Hey, Joey, I think I got something. Joey? Joey.
That's terrible.
I think I got something. Hello? Oh. Oh, man. The blinder, there's got to be stipulations to that. They must have to have somebody with them or something.
Equal rights, man.
Equal rights. Oh, that's crazy. So we got Rob Zombie coming up shortly. I'm very excited about that. He's an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. You know,
my wife's a huge fan of his, so I'm going to have to hear about that. You know what I mean? So Rob Zombie coming up. We've also got Chuck Klosterman, the author of Fargo Rock City. He's going to talk about his new book. It's a rock and roll show today, man. That's clearly what's happening, Riley.
It is.
I'm going to talk to Passman maybe again about that damn shark. Did you see that thing that caught off the coast of Martha's Vineyard? It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. 27 past the hour. Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. When we last left Mark and Grace, Mark was mistaken for a supporter of the violently homophobic Fred Phelps and got the sort of warm welcome that Fred Phelps supporters get wherever they go.
Ow!
Hey, stop hitting me. I'm not really with him.
Ow!
Grace had pulled her gun and fired two shots into the air.
Now that I have everyone's attention, back away from my boss, real slow-like.
Look, it's a plane. It's going to crash.
The door's opening. Whoever was on that plane is alive.
Marilyn Manson?
Which one of you yahoos shot at my plane?
The lesbian did it.
Sure, blame the lesbian. It's always the lesbian's fault.
How did you survive the crash? Not to change the subject.
The devil is my co-pilot.
Ooh.
It's a joke. The bullet didn't hit anything vital. I always land like that. The only problem is my drummer parachuted out. Is that him in a tree?
Get me out of here!
Marilyn, can I call you Marilyn? You're just the person I need to talk to. Mark Maron, Private Dick. That's my lesbian assistant, Grace. We've been hired to track down the Antichrist on Earth. Got any leads?
A lot of people think it's me.
Yeah!
But it's not.
Oh!
I've got a few ideas about the Antichrist, though. The beast with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns upon its horns, will appear as an angel of light but herald the era of tribulations. I've got to head out of here for the Tonight Show. You ever meet Jay? He's fabulous.
Hey, wait a minute.
Oops, Fred Phelps is still here.
It just hit me.
We've got a lesbian, a Jew, and a Satan worshiper all in one place at one time. I think I know what God would want us to do.
Great. Now what? Are you going to cast a spell on them or something?
I still have my gun and an itchy trigger finger.
No need. I have a black belt in karate. Well, everything I have is black, actually. Watch and learn. First, you have to throw your opponents off guard.
Hey, the Gatling brothers suck!
Did he say the Gatling brothers suck? I can't believe it!
Lord have mercy! Marilyn Manson flying through the air! Oh, he kicked me in the face! Knocked my tobacco clean out!
There, one pile of dumb rednecks freshly ass-kicked. Here's my support bus. Hop on. We'll chat along the way. No smoking or swearing on the bus, by the way.
You're kidding, right?
Am I known for my sense of humor?
Hey, don't leave me in the tree!
Drummers are a dime a dozen. Let's go!
What awaits Marilyn Manson at The Tonight Show? Other than a screaming fan base of kids who get picked on at school a lot. Is the Manson bus being followed by several pickup trucks with gun racks? Or is that just rush hour in this part of the country? What else do I have to say to make you tune in next week? Hey, maybe Mark will get a puppy. You like puppies, right? Find out next week when we hear Mark say...
Grace, put that gun away before you...
That's okay. He can play bass with the other hand. Anyone for Yahtzee?
That's next week, as our story heads towards its climax on Marc Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of America's Next Top Model Intern.
Hello, girls. I'm Jonathan Larson, senior producer at Morning Sedition. You're going to compete to be our new intern, and each week one girl will be voted off. When you're eliminated, you kind of have to leave the state.
My name is Dan Pashman, the editorial producer, and I'll be supervising your intern duties. They include research, neck rubs, and hot oil massages according to these printed instructions. There's a right way and a wrong way, ladies. See, I've made a spreadsheet.
Hey, ladies. My name's Chris. I'm the technical director. And I was hoping one of you could be my friend. You know, talk to me on my birthday and stuff. I'm so tired of prostitutes.
Hi, girls. I'm associate producer Brendan McDonald, and I just want to know if you feel the spirit of the Lord within you.
Who will stay, and who will be voted out?
Hey, good news, girls. We've decided you all win.
Yeah, big surprise. That's later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
There you go, 38 past the hour, Mark Maron, there's Mark Riley.
You're all going straight to hell.
Again?
Yes.
Rob Zombie's going to visit us from hell in just a few minutes. How do you like that? Zombie's proud to be from hell. His new movie, Hell's Rejects, right? Devil's Rejects, yeah. What a trippy movie. It had that weird, raw, kind of bloody, towny, speed freak Manson feel. You know, the 70s speed freak Manson cult feel? Dig it.
Well, see, I was always a big fan of Last House on the Left, which I thought really kind of... Actually, the template for that was, for me, Night of the Living Dead, where the star of it was my English professor in college.
Really?
Dwayne Jones. Absolutely, really? Yeah. The guy who started the Black Filmmaker Foundation.
The black dude that lives at the end, almost?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, let's...
Almost.
Almost lives, I guess.
He just capped in the head.
Oh, yeah.
We count some horseshoes. I'm not giving it away for anybody.
You can give away Night of the Living Dead, I think, the first one. If we get any emails like, thanks for ruining the movie, they, you know, like, get with it.
It's 36 years old.
So, this is an interesting story. A member of parliament has pledged to reward girls for their chastity by paying their university fees if they are virgins when they leave school, Riley. This is part of the plan. This is part of the way to stop the spread of AIDS, which apparently Uganda was once the epicenter of the AIDS epidemic, but has dropped from like a 30% infection rate to 6% in some areas, according to this survey. But it's primarily because of education, you know, of hipping people to it. And I guess the Kayunga area, which is in central Uganda, has got the highest rate. And these girls who have to be virgins also have to be from Kayunga.
Yeah. Now, it would be nice if they also paid the guy's tuition, too, if they remain virgin. But you can't really tell if a guy stayed virginal, huh?
Yeah. Well, no one's going to cop to that.
I know.
But I guess if you wanted to go to college and you sort of dressed up like a virgin. Yeah, what is it?
what? dressed up like a virgin?
I can tell if people are virgins, I think.
Men?
No, maybe not.
I was going to say. But you know what? On a serious note, Uganda has made extraordinary strides in Africa.
Yeah.
In cutting down on the AIDS epidemic. I mean, Uganda was at one point the epicenter of all this. And as you point out, their AIDS infection rate has really dropped dramatically.
Well, maybe this will work. It's just like that's sort of a weird thing when you're, you know, initiation at college. When you get to college, all right, come on, hymen check. Let's go. You can pick your classes later, but first we have to see who gets to go for free. Hymen check, line up.
I want that job.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, they have to remain virgins their first semester.
Yes, Chris.
Wow. What show is this? We got Rob Zombie coming up next. Stay here. It's 41 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
There you go, 46 past the hour, the little white zombie for you. Rob Zombie's going to be here momentarily. You're going to listen to him and me talk.
Hey,
and Riley.
Man, I'm sorry. Chris. This is the Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah.
sorry to interrupt you, but I think we have Lawton on the line.
Lawton's on the line from Iraq, or we don't know where he is. Folks, if you don't know, let me just tell our listeners, if you don't know, Lawton has been kidnapped in Iraq for the last week. He was there on the Truth Tour with some right-wing third-tier radio journalists, and we've been getting these hostage tapes from him. Is this really you, Lawton?
Hello, Mark?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hello, Mark.
Wow. Is that you, Lawton?
Yeah.
Are you okay? What's going on? Where are you?
I escaped the militant insurgents, Mark. I'm on a plane headed back to the States.
Oh, my God.
I escaped.
You escaped? How'd you manage that, Lawton?
Wait. Can't talk about it right now. I'm going to tell you all about this tomorrow. Where are you going to be tomorrow?
We're going to be at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, man. You've been there.
Oh, yeah, the place with all the lesbians.
Hey, okay.
Well, I'll come anyhow. Look for me tomorrow, Mark. I got to go. Apparently, I'm going to interfere with their radio signal.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
I'm turning it off right now. You don't have to get so ugly about it.
All right. Oh, I feel better, man. I feel better. I was worried about Lawton, and he is right. We are going to be at the Park Slope in Brooklyn tomorrow at the Tea Lounge. That's on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. Freddie Johnston is going to be there.
It's a nice spot, man. It's a really nice place to come in and hang out.
We had a good time the last time. They got all kinds of teas. They got booze for you alcoholics if you need to have a wake-up-y.
Huh? Are they serving at 6?
I don't know. You know, I asked the guy. I didn't realize he's got a full bar. It's a big place. Yeah. And they have all different coffees, all different teas. Very nice. I got there. They were playing Grateful Dead music, which is a guilty pleasure of mine.
And Frankie.
Well, no, it's not a guilty pleasure of his. He's quite proud of it. He's not. He doesn't hide that at all. It's like it's all dead all the time on Frankie's show, for God's sakes. So, look, our next guest is currently touring with Ozfest. His new film entitled The Devil's Rejects opens nationwide tomorrow. Rob Zombie joins us now in studio. All right, man, so I watched a film, and you definitely get the feel of one of those sort of 70s weird speed freak movies with the kind of Manson cult towny slasher flicks thing, you know, which is the one, you know what I'm talking about, which is the one that really inspired you?
You know, it's funny. It's like all that stuff really inspired me from the 70s because everything to me had that kind of feel. I mean, it didn't matter if you were watching Last House on the Left or Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Everything had a really...
Raw.
Just felt dirty.
Yeah.
Last House on the Left definitely felt dirty. I remember the movie theater I saw there, which was on 42nd Street.
And you came out of it probably feeling kind of bad about yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
But that was a different reason.
Well, you feel dirty, you know. That is true. And then you used B actors, I guess, for that reason. So, because you can't expect, like, great actors to act like that. Only certain people can act like that.
Well, I think all these actors are great actors. They're just typecast.
Right.
And I think that what bores me about a lot of mainstream actors is they're more concerned with their sort of like off-screen persona.
Yeah,
right. They've stopped being actors and they've started being celebrities.
Right.
And you would think the whole point of being an actor is to dig in and do these extreme roles, which, I mean, great actors like, you know, De Niro would do. But then now it's just like, well, it might hurt the readership of Us Weekly if I do something like demented and it's just boring.
And if they get dirty and they'll make a big press deal out of it and it's a big deal to get them. You couldn't get like a mainstream actor to act as dirty as you get some of these people.
Well, it's funny. Some people will. I mean, if you saw the movie California with Brad Pitt, to me, that's when he was his most compelling.
Yeah.
In that movie.
You got William Forsythe in this. He's one of my favorites. What was he like?
William's a pretty intense guy. He's he's not unlike the character he plays if you take out the crazy part. He's just an intense guy to be around, you know. He's very serious. He's a very throwback actor, you know, worshipping Lee Marvin and Robert Mitchum and those types. He wants to be, you know, back when, like, you could be kind of like the, you know, weird tough guy and still be the leading man. You didn't have to be the friend of the leading man as it is now.
So these guys, now, in a movie like this, because I watch it, and I don't know if I, do you, you used a lot of Groucho Marx references, Marx Brothers references and all that. Do you think these movies are essentially funny? Are they campy in some weird way? Or do you have a, what do you think was the intention of, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a horror movie. It's meant to scare people.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, there's different, I mean, there's so many types of horror movies. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it has funny moments that only come out of, it's funny because of how demented the movie is, but it's, you know, it's very gritty. It's very real. But then you watch, like, Seed of Chucky.
Yeah.
You know, there's not 1 second of a movie like that that you can even take seriously.
Yeah.
At all. I mean, and you watch it thinking the people making this aren't even taking it seriously, so.
So I was looking at the credits of the film. You actually had the guy who played Jason in the Friday the 13th movie as stunt coordinator?
That's his main thing in life. That's really what he does.
His name's Kane Hodder?
Kane Hodder, yeah. Oh.
And is there a different way of approaching stunts in a movie like this as opposed to any other movie? Or?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, you know, obviously it's safety first, and he does a lot of big movies. But the way we wanted to approach it was, as I said, make the fight scenes look clumsy. Because fight scenes in movies always looks like suddenly everyone's an expert boxer
or dancer
or fighter. Yeah, they're so graceful. And I was like, there's one big fight scene in the middle of the movie and no one even throws a punch because they're too busy like tripping and, you know, like,
falling
like if you see a real fight, it usually ends up with two guys in the gutter rolling around and one guy hits another guy with a trash can.
Yeah.
That's basically what a fight looks like. It's guys sparring like they're like in the gym.
Yeah, no one ever gets a shot in. It's just chaos and it's usually embarrassing.
One guy trips over something and the other guy starts kicking him in the head. That's basically how most fights go.
So did you start your show business career as a working on Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Yeah.
And you were a PA on Pee-wee?
Yeah.
And did your sense of theatrics and rock and roll and in movies, was that always something that was with you?
I think that just was, I'm a product of the times. You know, growing up in the 70s, everything was theatrical. I mean, it didn't matter if it was Kiss or Elton John or the Bee Gees or, you know, Donnie Marie Show. Everything was so insane. You know, everyone was insane.
Now, you've obviously had a movie career and a music career. You really controlled your music career in terms of the marketing, in terms of the White Zombies persona. Did you have to cede any control at all in making films?
Well, the first film that I made, House of a Thousand Corpses, was trickier because, you know, you don't have any kind of track record, so people are, you know how it goes. They hire you, and then they just suddenly don't trust you. And you're like, well, why did you hire me? Well, we can't answer that question, you know. But with the second film, since, of course, the first movie made somebody a lot of money, so now with the second film, they sort of took on a, like, if it's not broken, we're not going to try to fix it attitude, which is actually refreshing because that's not usually the case. You know, it's usually like, let's hire you and change every single thing about you that we think we hired you for in the first place.
When you were making this movie, was ever a point where you're like, you know, we've got too much money to make this look like the movie I want to make it look like?
Having too much money was never a problem that we suffered from, though.
Because I would think that when Tobe Hooper made the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it looks like he made it for $10.
Yeah, which adds to it. I think that, you know, that's one of my problems with movies, too, is they look too slick. They're so slick they never feel real. They're like, there was this heightened reality. In 70s movies, everybody looks real, like a lot of available light. And now it's like everything is like glamour lighting on every character. Everybody's standing in the best possible light they could ever stand. It doesn't matter if it's dark and they're on a street corner.
Yeah.
Some glamour lighting hitting them just right.
Yeah, and Sid Haig, I guess the lighting would have been lost on the makeup in his face. I mean,
he actually is always in glamour lighting, and that's in trying to help him out there.
He's that movie where he's having sex in that dream sequence. Man, that was a good one. I like that one. There's nothing like, you know, violent clown having, you know, like just clown sex. It's good.
Now, also, I was told that you were an illustrator for porno magazines.
Yeah, I did that for a long time.
Which magazines?
Well, you know when you see a big rack of magazines, it's Playboy,
yeah,
and then it goes to Penthouse, then Hustler,
yeah,
and then you get way down to the bottom, and there's all those ones. Like, who would buy those?
Yeah.
Those were the ones.
Those were the ones. Yeah. And you did cartoons or just illustrations?
Well, the way it would work is that I would do all the paste-up and design of all the porno content. But if they had one, I think it was some kind of trick where if you had one legitimate article, you could get newsstand distribution and not just like porn house distribution. So it was up to me to illustrate this fake real article about, you know, how to sleep on an airplane or, you know, vegetables are good for you. It'd just be in the middle of like, you know, all the anal shots. Suddenly this article about nothing.
Yeah.
And that was my job to illustrate.
Vitamins.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Now,
can you exercise too much? You know, one of those things.
You've done two horror flicks. Will number three also be horror, or are you thinking about branching out?
I'll do something different. I mean, these two films are sort of interconnected, so the third film will be something totally different.
What are you looking at?
I got a script now that's like a kind of a dark comedy. Very dark.
But this one was pretty funny.
It had funny moments, but this one, but this other movie's not violent or anything.
I like the film critic moment. That was a good moment. I don't want to tip too much about the film.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes.
And I like how much you use just shamelessly, you know, right from the beginning, you're just drenched in the F word constantly. And I think that adds to that grit that you were talking
about.
Yeah,
I mean, you wouldn't just buy it if they were all, like, saying friggin' this and freaking that. And...
But just, and just,
I'm surprised we got an R rating just based on the language.
Do you like your wife is in the film Sherry Moon Zombie, I guess is what she goes by. What you like working with your wife in the movie?
It's fun. It's good. We work out together on all kinds of things, and if we didn't work together, I'd never see her.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, you know, it was great talking to you. So where you're on the road now? You're touring with Ozfest.
Ozfest, yeah.
You can go to ozfest.com and learn that most of the shows are sold out except for like three in Tennessee.
Yeah, but the fence isn't that high, so you can jump over.
There you go.
There you go.
I didn't say it. That's direct from Rod Thomas.
Steal this concert.
Thanks for joining us, man. It's good talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Right on.
The film is The Devil's Rejects. It opens nationwide tomorrow. Well, folks, and also tomorrow, before you go see The Devil's Rejects, why don't you come down to T's Lounge in Brooklyn, where we are going to be doing our show from.
That's right. Don't touch me.
Parks, you can touch him. No. Parksville, Brooklyn. It's on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. We're going to have Freddie Johnson. It's going to be Mark and Mark the Cardinals coming down. Johnny K Street will be there.
Lawton say he was coming?
Lawton is going to come. He's going to tell us about Iraq. Ooh. How do you like that? I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club this weekend, Friday and Saturday. You can go to markmaron.com for details. You can go to our website, morningsedition.com, for that. Hey, are liberals too sensitive? Can they go too far? I mean, I certainly think so. And we're going to talk about something when we come back that will make you think so as well. Morning Sedition, 57 past the hour.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
How are you, the philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes? What's going on? Come on down tomorrow if you're in the Brooklyn area. We'll be performing here at Park Slope, Brooklyn, at T's Lounge on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. We've been there before. We had a great time.
Yeah.
We got all the guys coming down. Cardinal will be there. Lawton's back from Iraq. He's going to be there to talk to us about what happened to him. We got the Revolutionary will be there. We got Johnny K Street. It's going to be worthwhile. Come down Friday and Saturday night. I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club. You can go to our website, morningsedition.com, for details, or markmaron.com. Okay, that out of the
you
way.
You still got your website?
That, I do. I got the website. Okay. I actually went over there, and I updated my tour dates yesterday. I don't go to it much. And then after I mentioned it the other day on the show here, some guy wrote me and said, "That's pretty cool. I spent an hour there when I should have been working." There's all kinds of little things on there. But I just don't update it that much. Let's get into this, though, Riley. Before we do get into it, we are going to confront the issue of the oversensitivity of liberals and whether or not it can be destructive as opposed to productive. This is a part of the political correct argument, but there's a story out of Britain that we're going to get to in just a second. But I want to talk about channel leakage. Chain of leakage is the most important thing right now. Dick Cheney and his right-hand man, Scooter Libby, are entrenched in this Valerie Plame leak. Now, there's new stories coming out today that a memo, a State Department memo that was on an airplane with Colin Powell on July 10th, 2 days after, what was that, July 10th, 2003?
No, actually, I think it may have been July 7th.
Okay, July, let's get the date right. The classified, here we go. The classified State Department memo that was on the plane with W to Africa and Colin Powell, it was 3 days after the Wilson story.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. And the Wilson story was the 6th, I believe.
Okay. So there you go. 3 days after that, and in the memo, it said classified. There was classified information that showed that Valerie Plame was indeed an undercover operative. Okay? So now, if this was shared with the staff, if this was shared with anybody, with Karl Rove, with anybody on the plane, they knew. And this was a few days before the Novak piece even, you know, hit the stands. So they would have known. I don't like to use the word smoking gun, but this could put Rove up for perjury. Certainly Scooter Libby, this is Dick Cheney's right-hand man, and that's who we want to talk about. Because I'll tell you something, watching the president deal with this thing makes me realize more than ever that he is certainly not in charge. He is the faux Christian, AWOL, ex-blow monkey puppet, the Cheney regime's neocon death cult, without a doubt, and Scooter Libby is his Dick Cheney's sidekick.
Yeah.
Now, you have to understand that if what we're saying here is true, if what Riley was saying the other day was true, that this neocon cabal, this Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, Armitage, Fife, if it is true that they have, that there is a level of seditious conspiracy going on, a level of connivance, my new word.
Connivance, there
yes,
you go.
To initiate the war in Iraq at the cost of anything. Okay, anything. These guys don't care. So what they did is they bullied Colin Powell. Scooter Libby bullied Colin Powell. Cheney and Scooter Libby bullied him.
Yeah.
To give that presentation. They badgered Powell's speechwriters for weeks, culminating in a meeting where Libby presented information that, according to those who were there, was over the top and too aggressive in that presentation that Powell gave to the UN.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the evidence was proven false.
Well, see, this is the thing that a lot of people don't realize, is that that speech, the original draft, was written by Scooter Libby and his
people.
There you
go. So what it is, these guys are willing to do anything.
Yeah.
So it is without a doubt in my head that at the core of this plane leakage was a conspiracy on behalf of the neocons to do whatever they needed to do to get the troops to Iraq, to make this invasion happen. And now we know it was all based on lies, and these guys are guilty of treason. They're certainly, I believe that Rove is guilty of perjury, which will reveal itself soon, and now the president is nominating Supreme Court justices as a subterfuge, and the president is clearly not in control of the country. If you have a president that gets up there and says, look, we'll see what the investigator says, without walking down the hall and taking charge of things, he is not running the country. And Dick Cheney knew about this. Dick Cheney was there badgering the CIA to give him information that would validate the war that he wanted to have, and now the neocons got the war, and they don't care. You got to realize, Dick Cheney's the guy that said, hey, look, Reagan's proved to us that deficits don't matter. He doesn't care who hurts. He doesn't care who goes broke, and clearly they don't care who dies, and they don't care about national security, and he's at the center of this thing, and Scooter Libby is his right-hand man, and now they got whatever they wanted. They've all made fortunes for themselves and for their friends through military contracting. They've bankrupted this country, which is going to force privatization, which is exactly what they wanted, and they don't. So what if a couple of them go to jail? You know, it's like the mob with these guys. They get out of jail and they enter the private sector, giving speeches, or they work. They work for redesigning campaigns. Even if Karl Rove goes to jail, you think that guy's finished?
You know what's real interesting about this whole scenario? One of the things that Scooter Libby tried to convince Colin Powell to include in this speech was the discredited allegation that members of Al-Qaeda had met with Saddam, this report that an Al-Qaeda hijacker, Mohammed Atta, had a meeting with an Iraqi intelligence official in Prague. You may have heard that before, folks who have been following this from the very beginning, and that was completely and thoroughly discredited. Yet the fact is that Cheney's office and Scooter Libby was acting on behalf of the vice president at the time, made effort after effort after effort to convince Powell to link Saddam and Al-Qaeda without really having any evidence.
So these are people that are willing to take the world into war to meet their own ends. Do you think that they would care about, you know, leaking this Valerie Plame's name? It was a strategy. It's a strategy. And it was a conspiracy, and they should all be run out of Washington. They should be put in jail. The thing is that by outing Valerie Plame, they compromised national security. They put other CIA agents in the field at risk. They put everyone that was working under her at risk. The CIA has confirmed that she was undercover. This State Department memo confirms that she was undercover. And then now we have CIA, former CIA operatives who say they have compromised national security. These guys are like terrorists. Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, Paul Wolfowitz, Don Rumsfeld, they're helping the terrorists. They've debilitated the possibility of this country getting effective human intelligence for years to come because of their vengeful tactics. And they put us in this war based on a lie, and that's it. Cheney's going to be at a fundraiser tomorrow in New Jersey at the Westin Hotel in Plainsboro, New Jersey, just north of Princeton. We've gotten a few calls from some listeners saying that they're going down there. They're going to be meeting in the parking lot of the Westin at 4 p.m. to protest.
New York today.
Oh, great. So now the trains are going to be screwed up.
Well, it's a fundraiser for Vito Fasella, who's a congressman from Staten Island. Yeah.
Oh, great. So now I'm not going to be able to get my helicopter.
Well, I guess you won't be able to get your helicopter. But what's ironic about this is that New York City's most prominent Republican, mm-hmm. that being, of course, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, is not attending this fundraiser. He doesn't make the same mistake twice because he did attend some Cheney fundraisers last year just before the Republican convention.
This one in New Jersey is for Forrester because they're trying to...
Yeah, they're trying to get him elected governor.
All right, so go down there. Be safe, be careful, but do some righteous protesting if you want. That's 4 p.m. tomorrow at the Westin in Plainsboro, New Jersey. Now, this story is something interesting. The word fail, all right, this is out of Britain. The word fail... They want to ban it from use in British classrooms and replace it with the phrase deferred success to avoid demoralizing pupils. All right, this is a group of teachers that has proposed deferred success. If I was told that with a kid, if I were a kid and they said deferred success, be what? What does that mean? Did I win or did I lose? Did I do good or did I do bad? Did I pass or did I fail? Failure promotes it instigates you to win. It instigates you to do better. For me, it just made me, I just fell in love with
it. You just
thought
it's seething.
I'm like, I want to be a failure. my friend Jim Schwartz got a great joke about that, where he realizes he looks around his room and he's just like, it's just a disaster. He goes, I'm a loser. And he says, wait a minute. I'm not a loser. I've tried. I'm a failure. Jim Short, very funny guy. Just giving him a little plug. So I think this is going a little too far. I don't think that the word fail is too insensitive. I don't think that it has the same connotations to a child that it does to an adult. When you say you're a failure or you failed to an adult, that implicates their entire being. It implicates everything that's brought them to that point in their life. When you're a kid, fail just means I got to do better next time. I didn't pass the test. I think
That's all it is. You didn't pass the test. Passing level is, you just didn't do it. So you got to try harder. You're right. That's what it's all about.
I just think that this is one of those confusing, strange, overly thought, overly wrought, kind of politically correct, hypersensitive, liberal sort of ideas that I just think is ridiculous and unnecessary. Am I wrong? 866-303-2270. Why don't you call us and tell us what you think of some of these or if you've experienced that in your life? Because any of these sort of the idea of trying to be sensitive, which actually, sometimes confuses issues and doesn't help. We've got Chuck Klosterman coming up. His new book is called Killing Yourself to Live. He also wrote Fargo Rock City, which taught me a lot about my wife, and I'll explain that later. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Thanks for listening, folks. We're happy to have you here. Chuck Klosterman's going to come up. I like that guy. He's a music critic. I guess you'd call that, but it broadens itself. It's more cultural criticism based on music.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Fargo, Rock City, and his new book is Killing Yourself to Live. He's going to be out here in a second. You know, we just got a call from our corporate offices on 6th Avenue. By the way, we got some phone calls coming up here about deferred success.
Yeah.
As opposed to taking away the word fail. Yeah, we get some calls. But we did get a call on the break from a 6th Avenue saying this show has to, it wasn't on the break. What am I making that up for? It was a few days ago. That this show needs to make some more money. That's what our corporate office says. Otherwise, we can't pay Dan Pashman's salary. So we're going to work our, we're going to work our sponsors into the show a little more. That's the deal with today's product placement minute. That's what it is. Yeah, play the little silly music. That's the product placement minute music. All right, so what's our product placement news story of the day, Mark?
Well, Mark, violence has broken out in Israel as soldiers remove Jewish extremists from settlements in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military has just stormed a beachfront hotel and had to go from room to room dragging people out.
Wow, that's awful. But say, wasn't that at the beautiful Palm Beach Hotel?
It sure was, Mark. There's always something happening at the relaxing Palm Beach on the shores of the Mediterranean. I even have one of their ashtrays right here next to me.
Wow, I gotta get me one of those.
Also arising from Gaza, Israeli TV aired images of right-wing extremists trying to stone a Palestinian youth to death.
Those people have got to calm down. And you know what'll do it?
I sure do, Mark. Eskimo pies. Chill out your summer with the cool and creamy ice cream treat that comes from the Antarctic.
Wow, and maybe the settlers might give some territory for a Klondike bar like the one I've got right here, Mark. Mmm, Klondike bar.
Prime Minister Sharon says the government must take every necessary measure to end the violence and stop the extremists.
Wow. Excuse me. That's tragic. And that's today's Product Placement Minute.
They got a special place on the all-star train to hell for the both of us.
We keep going to hell, right?
Hey.
All right, so let's talk about this story that we got some calls up. The word fail is trying. There's a few teachers have proposed that they remove the word fail from British classrooms and replace it with the word phrase deferred success, which I think is ludicrous. I think it's a hypersensitive. I think it's an example of being it's sort of politically correct, but it's just overly
screwy.
It's screwy.
Say it.
It's going to make the kids soft in the noggin. You know what I'm saying? Let's see what people think, our listeners here. We've got Maria listening in Atlanta. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. I'm going to tell you, you're my lifeline down here.
Oh, well, thank you.
I listen to you every morning, and you're fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. It's our pleasure. So what do you think of this deferred success?
I think it's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Sorry if that was wrong to say, but I mean, I have two boys, 7 and 8, mm-hmm. and you know, you don't want to call your kids a failure. You don't want to beat them down, but you don't want to, you know, coddle them to the point where they're spoiled. That's what I mean. A lot of kids now, you see them, teenagers, and it's like they walk around. They think they're entitled to things, and you know, they're entitled to success.
Yeah.
They don't want to work for it. You know, it's just like. My mom used to tell me, you know, if I failed a grade, I mean, she would let you know that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, and this is making it acceptable. Deferred success. I mean, like you said, what does that mean?
Exactly.
You know, if you don't drive them to succeed, they're not going to succeed. So you're not deferring success. Eliminating it.
Yeah, and you're giving them, right, you're diluting them and making them soft in the noggin, I say.
Yeah. Put that big L on their head for loser.
Thank you, Maria. Appreciate it. You know what's weird is that, like, you know, I walked around with that sense of entitlement until like 2 days ago.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
What made you lose it? No, never mind.
The pain of failure. Chris in Connecticut, listening on the internet there. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Chris. I don't know what Professor Cerumi would think of this idea.
Professor, what's the grade?
The grade is F.
you couldn't say the grade is deferred success.
That's right.
DS.
Are you a teacher or something?
No, I'm the son of one, though.
Oh, uh-oh. Yeah? Did your father ever say you failed?
Well, my father did. Unfortunately, my mother was the teacher.
So what do you think of this whole thing?
Well, most of my teachers always told me I didn't live up to my potential.
Now, I got that, too.
No, me, too.
Nobody ever really, really imparted what they thought I should do to live up to my potential, which is what I think about this idea. You know, I don't think dictating language for the teachers is going to dictate the teacher's attitude. I mean, one teacher could sensitively sit there and tell the kid, you know, you failed this test, we have to work harder. This is what I suggest we do to get your grades up, while another teacher could sit there and sarcastically make air quotes in the air while they're saying, oh, you have deferred success on this test, Billy.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's it. That's sort of similar to the you're not living up to your expectations thing, which now that I think about it, should be criminalized. That's a horrendous thing to say, to create this vague idea of what we're not achieving without getting giving us any specific goals to reach for.
Well, you got my vote.
All right, man. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Wow, you got that, too? You're not living up to your potential. I heard that all through school.
You have such potential. It's like, well, why doesn't somebody tell me what to do with it?
Yeah.
So I don't end up a comedian for 25 years, you know, chasing my dreams futilely. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Professor, what's your grade?
The grade is F.
Not anymore, it ain't.
Do we got time for one more? No, we don't. Thanks for your calls. I appreciate it. In a couple of minutes, we're going to have Chuck Klosterman out here to talk rock and roll and rock and roll death.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think he's going to really get into something that I'm interested in. That's it. It's just fascinating how the cats that have died have become immortalized. And there's a lot of cats that died but no one cares about. But the ones that really have died successfully.
Yeah.
They're
successful death?
Yeah, rock and roll heroes forever. We'll talk to Chuck Klosterman when we come back. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's been a rock and roll morning. Had Ram Zavi in here earlier, and now our next guest wanted to find out why the best career move for a rock star is sometimes death. So he hit the road and chronicled his discoveries in his latest book, Killing Yourself to Live. Please welcome author Chuck Klosterman. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning.
Morning.
I got to be honest with you. Your first book, Fargo Rock City, which was the first book, right?
True.
That taught me more about my wife. That helped me so much. My wife, here's the deal, is your musical tastes are almost identical to hers. She's 12 years younger than I am, and she grew up listening to Motley Crue. She's a big fan of Ozzy. She loves Rob Zombie. And reading your book, because I got an old hippie head. I got a blues-based brain, and I like the stuff that was earlier, and I just miss that because I'm a little older.
How old are you?
I'm 41.
41, so she would be, I guess, now 29?
Yeah,
wow.
About that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's perfect. But
you're wondering how he pulled that off, aren't you?
What do you mean? Look at me. I'm an attractive guy. But I want to thank you for that because it gave me a new appreciation for a lot of bands that I dismissed, and it was a great book.
Yeah, well, I guess if you trying to understand a woman through the music of Faster Pussycat, that probably is the best book. So
exactly.
I appreciate that she or you read it, or both of you or whatever.
Yeah, we both read it. We dug it a lot. This new book is pretty enchanting as well, my friend. Because,
enchanting, huh?
Yes.
Not disenchanting?
No. Because death is the way I found my way into rock and roll in a lot of ways.
How so?
Well, my father, you can interview me. My dad used to play this Buddy Holly tape over and over again. And like very early in my memory, rock and roll was connected with death because every time I saw Buddy Holly's face, that was the guy that died in the plane crash with the other guy, the Big Bopper. And it was just so interconnected. Rock and roll, death, and guys who died was interconnected with me.
Well, you might be somewhat disappointed by the spot of Buddy Holly's death now.
Oh, really?
Well, it's sort of strange. You know, it's outside of a place called Clear Lake, Iowa, and which is a town name because it's next to a lake that is, in fact, very clear.
Yeah.
And you go to the little you know, visitors bureau there, and they give you these directions to find the spot of his death. So you get them, and you drive out, and you got to go on some gravel roads, and then you have to walk like half a mile through this bean field, and you keep thinking to yourself, like, well, I wonder if I went the wrong way or if I read these directions backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you do find it, and it's basically a metal cross about 3 feet high, unadorned, and then just surrounded by like Budweiser cans and Blockbuster cards, and
that's it.
And you would never ever stumble across it by chance. Like, you have to be looking for it.
That's where the plane went down.
Yeah.
There's no interactive sort of like you push a button it goes hello baby. Yeah.
Nothing.
Chantilly Lace. Yeah.
Lou Diamond Phillips is not pictured anywhere nearby. It was sort of, I guess, underwhelming. I mean, it's weird because you walk out there and you're looking at this, you know, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, these three legends have died, and their legacy is basically, in a lot of ways, built in, you know, that tragedy, and their iconography will forever be associated with this, and they'll always be young. And you're trying to look at it and find things that make you go, like, you know, this is meaningful.
It's not there,
Well, it's just, you know, it's like there's 15 things at most churches more impressive than this, you know. It's just a little...
I just got this image of, like, just Don McLean sitting there. Bye! Did you... Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
No, I'm curious. Did you go to the site where Otis Redding's playing right now?
You know, that was in, I believe, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, or it's just somewhere outside
somewhere
Madison,
there,
yeah.
And I did not, because the fact of the matter is this trip was much more... I mean, in the book now, it seems like I had this very conscious decision, like I had to go down the eastern seaboard and across the south and up to Minneapolis and over Seattle. But at the time, I was just kind of figuring out as I was going. So I had to make all these decisions. It's like, do I go to where Bob Stinson drank himself to death or where that plane crash happened? And I ended up just going to Minneapolis and then heading west. You know, there's so many places I wish I could have went to. And, you know, like a...
Did Bob Stinson actually die in a bar?
In his apartment.
Okay.
And I found his apartment. Mm. But, you know, if I would have known I was writing a book, I would have went to all these places. At the time, I was just doing an article for Spin Magazine. Okay. So I spent a lot of time thinking, like, there's no way I'm going to get all this in 5,000 words. I never would have.
Yeah.
So I ended up expanding into a book kind of, you know, I made that decision maybe halfway through. But, like, I mean, I really wish I'd have went to Cincinnati where the Who concert was, where all the people got trampled to death, and... I wish I would have went to where Randy Rhoads' plane crashed in Florida.
Yeah.
I should have went down. I mean, the initial...
Not that Randy.
Oh, I know.
I would have liked to end the trip down, like, a Joshua Tree where Graham Parsons died in at that motel. But, you know, I guess just what's in the book is there. I mean, it's strange in promoting this book by saying, here are things that are not inside of it. But,
well, let's talk about what is inside of it. Bob Stinson, the guitarist for The Replacements, who died sadly, you know, he was sad for many years before he died. And who were some of the other places of death that you went to?
Let's see. Well, the probably the most evocative one was where the Great White Fire was in West Warwick, Rhode Island, where 100 people died in that club fire.
It's pretty fresh.
Yeah. Recently.
Yeah.
I went to where Dwayne Allman died.
Where did he die?
He died in Macon, Georgia at an intersection in a motorcycle accident.
Right.
In the exact same spot, another member of the Allman Brothers also died in a motorcycle accident.
The same spot?
In the same intersection, yeah.
Wow, that's kind of creepy.
That is
weird.
Creepy.
You know, here's the weird thing, though. It's like, okay, so I'm driving to Macon, Georgia, and I'm playing the Allman Brothers, and I'm thinking, like, well, okay, what does it mean that these two members of the band died at the same spot? And, like, you know, how does this sort of establish the way we perceive the legacy of Southern rock? And, like, you know, and does the fact their motorcycle accidents have any impact? Is the fact that, you know, now there's only one Allman Brother in the Allman Brothers band have any meaning?
Yeah.
But then you get there, and you realize it's just a road, right?
Right.
It's just... You know, it's just a road where, you know, two things can collide. And you start realizing that all the meaning that we place on celebrity death and all sort of the import and the way that their mortality changes the meaning of their music is a completely interior intellectual process.
Sure.
And that, like, you know, and a lot of the book is, I suppose, very interior in that, you know, it's sort of... being very aware, being very self-aware about what are essentially non-events, because you go to a place where something happened and, you know, you think that seeing it is going to change the meaning of it.
It must actually do the opposite on some level. It just, like you said, it humanizes it or it deflates it of meaning. Like, you know, I mean, I can understand how a gravesite is enshrined and then becomes a sort of a mystical tourist attraction where people do pull a certain amount of significance and bonding with a community of people who respect that artist. But just to go to an intersection, it must be sort of like, oh, wow, you know, this is just, like you said, it's just a street.
Well, at the same time, like, if you go to a gravesite, you know, the idea of burial and all that process is so people can grieve and so they can find symbolism and they create symbolism, right? So when you go to the places where the deaths actually happen, it is devoid of symbolism. It's kind of built in realism.
Sure.
So you start looking at these things, you know, like you look at, say, the apartment where Bob Simpson and the Replacements died. You know, I was kind of peering in this apartment, which is now rented by someone else.
Yeah.
And you know, I
and they're like, another one.
And like, well, I don't know. You know, that was a hard one to find. Not a lot of people knew precisely what apartment it was, and I'm still not. There were two.
Right.
Like A and B, and I was never exactly sure. But, you know, you start thinking of things like it was on the second floor, and it had this incredibly kind of crickety wooden staircase. And I remember thinking, like, you know, Minnesota, you know, it snows and it's ice. What a terrible place for a drunk guy to live.
Because of the stairs.
It would have been the worst thing walk up every day, you know. And that's the kind of things that's interesting. Like, I never, you know, you forget about the little, like, the very specific details of what life is like, because you just, you know, you think of, okay, you know, Kurt Cobain killed himself at, well, what used to be this greenhouse, you know. So as I was looking at it, I did find myself more often thinking, like, well, you know, where would he have, like, parked his car?
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
That's why I didn't want to go. Like, some people said, like, well, you should have went to gravesites. You should have went to where Jim Morrison is, you know, buried.
Right, yeah, like but, everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it's just, to me, it's much more interesting where things happen as opposed to where we place things.
Yeah. You know? Well, I had that moment when I visited Graceland years ago where you're on the tour and you kind of go, can we see the toilet? Huh. Can we go to the bathroom? Did you have any interest in doing that?
Well, you know, I went to two in one day. Memphis is a good place for saving time if you're looking for dead people, because you can do Elvis in the morning and Jeff Buckley in the afternoon.
Buckley drowned off a
he
Mississippi, didn't he?
Yeah, in this little Mud Bay area kind of, and that was, you know, in some ways I think, like, to me Buckley's situation was much more interesting than Elvis's, because, you know, prior to his death, Jeff Buckley was sort of this respected but, you know, sort of unheralded avant-garde singer-songwriter that music people really liked, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he goes swimming and he drowns. And now he has all these songs about, like, drowning in your own tears and all these things.
Okay.
So these people now have almost built this very interesting cult around his persona, and they kind of inject the knowledge of his death and the circumstances of it back into his music.
Sure.
And that's what, I mean, to me, that was one of the most interesting things I found writing about, is just how people changed their memory of
myths
people.
Are built.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about some of the more you know, the Dakota where John Lennon was killed, or where Joplin died, or Mama Cass choked on the tuna fish? What about those?
Well, the Mama Cass thing, actually, that's not true.
That isn't true. That's urban legend.
That's urban legend. She just had a heart attack.
Oh, she had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or a coronary problem. But it's you know,
disappointed, right?
Well, I am. All these years.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting how that myth is keeps being perpetuated. And it's really just because she was kind of obese, so people assume she must have been eating all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Just to keep it up, yeah.
The Dakota, I wanted to go to the Dakota, but remember, like I was saying, this was going to be like a story for Spin Magazine initially. So my editor was like, no, you should go to where Sid Vicious killed his girlfriend.
The Chelsea Hotel, yeah.
So I talk about the Dakota, and I've been there on my own. And I, you know, I'm a much bigger Beatles fan than I am a punk rock fan. So it was sort of this strange thing where I there's some, like, I guess, probably mild, like, media analysis in this book as well, and how you make decisions when you're doing a story like that. So I go to the Chelsea instead, you know, and it's no longer a hotel room. You know, they've made it into an apartment, and, you know, you're just kind of looking around, and, you know, I talk to the people behind the desk, and, you know, like, they're like, people come from Japan, and they want to stay in room 100, because that's where Nancy Spungen got killed by Vicious, you know, and it is interesting that. Another time when I was on the road, one of these places, someone, you know, tried to show how emblematic the place was by saying, you know, people come from Japan to see this. That seems to be the universal way to measure fandom. If someone comes from Japan, you know, it's really
important. And it's for real.
Yeah.
Another celebrity that, when I was very young, that in connecting rock and roll and death for me was the cover of the album Pearl by Janis Joplin. Mm. She's so beautiful. And then my parents had it, and I just remember, like, listening to it and looking at the picture of my mother saying she died of a drug overdose. So in my mind, as an 8-year-old, you know, her beauty was completely infused with drug overdoses.
It's interesting you think Janis Joplin's beautiful.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I never thought that.
That cover of that album, of Pearl?
Well, I mean,
it's a great picture.
I mean, she has, you could say she's a very organic kind of beauty to her. But it's interesting to me. I never were, you know, I would never use that word to describe her. But
oh,
that,
yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think that cover was very enchanting. Again, the word enchanting with me. What's wrong? Well, I don't know what you're bringing out.
It's Narnia
me.
Now.
Yeah, it's Narnia. Yes, yeah. C.S. Lewis land. The, what is it? The line in the word? What? All right. The, so what was there a moment during this whole process of putting this together, the book, that you were earnestly blown away?
Well, was I blown away? I mean, certainly I was most affected in Rhode Island, but that's for reasons that have nothing to do with me or the really even the conditions. It was just, it was within a year, and it was 100 people, and they weren't celebrities. They were just real people, so yeah. The community was still sort of, you know the club where that happened at, you know, is now, of course, it's gone, yeah. But it's like surrounded by these little crosses that people have fashioned themselves, and people sit in the middle of these crosses and like smoke cigarettes and smoke right. pot and talk about all these people who died in the middle of the night. It's pretty interesting, you know. You know, a lot of the book is also like, it's what happens in between these places when I'm driving, and I'm sort of thinking a lot about women I was involved with in my past, and I start kind of intertwining the idea of death and love and rock music and, you know.
Reflections. On yes. existence, and it's a, I'm excited about the book. It's Chuck Klosterman's been our guest. Killing Yourself to Live. 85% of a True Story is the title of the book. Thanks for joining us. It was great talking
Thanks
to you.
A lot,
Thanks
sir.
For having me on.
Okay, it's 48 past the hour. We'll be back. I'll tell you a story about me at the Chelsea Hotel when we come back. Right? I promise.
Not me.
Yeah, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
All right, 53 past the hour. Let's land this thing. We've got the bakery, City Bakery stuff going here. Beautiful. Croissants. Surprise. That's Freddie Johnston you're listening to right now. That's the song. He was, he's great. And he's going to be with us tomorrow at the Tea Lounge. That's in Brooklyn, Park Slope, Brooklyn. It's on Union Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. He's going to come down. Oscar-nominated actor Jimon Hansu, the tall guy. Amistad and a couple of, He's good. He's the Island is opening tomorrow, and he's in that. New York food critic Arthur Schwartz, the pizza guy. He'll be there. He wrote a book on pizza.
He's bringing some?
I don't know. I hope so. These weekends are killing me with his food. Juan Smalls is going to be there. He's back from Iraq. You know, he was on the Truth Tour. He was on that tour where the right-wing third-tier media personalities, radio personalities, went to get the truth. And they brought Lawton from Air America and immediately ditched him, and he got kidnapped. It's been awful. But we got this call earlier today from him, which is encouraging. Is this really you, Lawton?
Hello, Mark?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hello, Mark?
Wow. Is that you, Lawton?
Yeah.
Are you okay? What's going on? Where are you?
I escaped the militant insurgents, Mark. I'm on a plane headed back to the States.
Oh, my God.
You
escaped? How'd you manage that, Lawton?
Wait, can't talk about it right now. I'm going to tell you all about this tomorrow. Where are you going to be tomorrow?
We're going to be at the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, man. You've been there.
Oh, yeah, the place with all the lesbians.
Hey, okay.
Well, I'll come anyhow. Look for me tomorrow, Mark. I got to go. Apparently, I'm going to interfere with their radio signal.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
I'm turning it off right now. You don't have to get so ugly about it.
All right. So there you go. That's Lawton. He's going to be there tomorrow to explain to us what the hell happened there. Now, I told you that I was going to be telling you a story about the Chelsea Hotel.
Yeah, please tell me.
So before we do the cliff notes, I'll tell you. I went there once, years ago, before I lived here. Before I lived here, I went there. A friend of mine, the sick part about this is a friend of mine told me he had had sex with a woman on top of the Chelsea Hotel. So in my head, I'm like, well, then I got it. All right? So I was here. I was drunk. I was with a woman. I went to the Chelsea. I got a room. We went to the roof. We had sex on the roof of the Chelsea Hotel. The next day, the guy who's right here in Klosterman's book, I believe the guy's name is Stanley. Yeah, Stanley Bard. He's been there for years.
Yeah.
I'm checking out the next day after being there one night. I got no legs. I go, no, nothing. I'm standing there with a girl whose hair is messed up. You know what I mean? And he looks at both of us and he goes, I pay him. And he goes, do you want a receipt for what you did? That is a true story.
Up on the roof.
And I, when I got divorced, I actually tried to live there. And that same guy, Stanley, said, he'll give me a good deal. And I got there. It was so sad because I got there. All I had were two plates of cereal and some soy milk, you know. And I'm like, and I'm looking around, and Mishan's looking around. I'm like, I can't do this. And I didn't, thank God. It's not cheap. All right, here we go. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. An Ohio County election official has been disciplined for taking money from the Diebold Voting Machine Company. In a related story, George Bush, who violated election rules by stealing the election using rigged voting machines by Diebold, will be charged with nothing and fined nothing. A group of parents wants to ban the word fail from British classrooms. They want to replace it with the familiar phrase, quote, close your eyes and think of England. Teachers originally wanted to change it to the phrase deferred success, but were afraid most students would fail to understand what that meant. The federal government is cracking down on pornography spam. Supporters of the spam counter say that millions of Americans still don't know how much they need their penises enlarged.
Ooh.
Some of these emails even went to children who complained these emails about sex distracted them from their video games in which they ran over hookers with their car. Phrase of the day. Phrase of the day, just drop it into conversation. They're all in it together, man. The Republicans, the voting machine makers, the bureaucrats, and the coin dealers. Wake up, sheeple. The good citizens in Ohio have to band together because the corrupt lunatics have unionized.
Woo.
There you go. We'll see you in Brooklyn tomorrow at the Tea Lounge, Union Street, between 6th and 7th Avenues, Riley.
Yeah, it's going to be big fun tomorrow with Freddie Johnson playing live all show long. This has been a good one, man. I had a lot of fun today.
It's a good show today, buddy.
Yeah, now let's have some food. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.